The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Dallas Freshka. I also cover the top movies and my NFL picks for week number three. All this and more on Revelator.
Delivering the goods at every freaking turn.
Hey, welcome to Revelator. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. Woo! Got an awesome show tonight. Producer Mike on the board. And of course, I'm right here in the booth with the cans on. And the lovely and very, very talented Dallas Freshka will be joining us here in a moment. You do not want to miss, one, the music, and two, Dallas Freshka. She's punk rock all the way. Really good stuff. Hey, Slash from Guns N' Roses made a comment about Dallas Freshka and her band, that it was kick-ass rock and roll, so you do not want to miss tonight's music guest. But you know what? We haven't talked sports in quite a... It's been a while. It really has. We've been doing double features with Fight or Flight and the Black Lodge and Candlelight Red and American Overdose. We did an extra-long feature with Brian Ferry from Shadows Fall. So we've been really, really busy focusing on, you know, the music, which is what we're all about here, and we enjoy all those artists and all the artists who've ever been on the show, and we enjoy their them donating their time. But if, you know what? It's NFL season. It's football. The weather's changing a little. Leaves are turning, and we're week three already in the NFL season. And as a Browns fan, we're already ready for the draft in April. So nothing's changed as far as that's concerned. But I'll tell you what, so far, I've been making my picks online. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm sure you've seen them. Right now, so far, in the first 2 weeks, I'm 21-10. Now, I've actually outpicked some of the NFL Network analysts, Heath Evans, LaDainian Tomlinson, William McGinnis, and Darren Sharper. Hey, NFL Network, can I get a gig, okay, as an NFL analyst on Sundays? I'm free. Let's take a look at this week's games. Now, Thursday night, this is an intriguing game. Now, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know, last season I couldn't pick a Thursday night game for anything. I just couldn't. So far this season, doing much better. This Thursday night is a tough one to pick. It's in Philadelphia. The Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid, the former Eagles coach, he was there for 14 seasons, heading back to Philadelphia on the sidelines as the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'll tell you what, if anybody knows that roster better than anyone, it would be Andy Reid. And I'm a bet that the Kansas City Chiefs would start 3-0 in the season. That's what I'm going with. I'm going Kansas City Chiefs heading to Philadelphia, and the Eagles start 1-2. And Andy Reid, a team that was 2-14 last year, you get a coach like Andy Reid in there and a system in there. You make a few moves, you get a quarterback in there, all of a sudden you start 3-0. And that's exactly what's going to happen, in my opinion, Thursday night. The Houston Texans, you know, they've dodged a couple bullets here in the first couple weeks of the season. That crazy come from behind Monday night against San Diego, and then the dodging the Tennessee Titans in overtime last week, taking on the Baltimore Ravens, who they did beat the Browns last week, but they did not look stellar. They only scored 14 points in their own building. With that being said, I'm going to take the Houston Texans in Baltimore. I think this next game here is probably the game of the week, in my opinion. It's the Green Bay Packers and the Cincinnati Bengals. And this, I'm not saying this couldn't be a Super Bowl pick, but I wouldn't be surprised. These two teams definitely have the makeup of being and getting to the Super Bowl. There's no doubt about it. Aaron Rodgers has been stellar so far, even though they lost the first game against San Francisco. But that being said, I'm going to take the Cincinnati Bengals at home in that building on the riverfront. I think the Bengals, even coming off a short week, playing Monday night against the Steelers, I think are up for the task. You have the St. Louis Rams taking on the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going to take the St. Louis Rams in this one. Jeff Fisher, that defense, Sam Bradford, the running game, the play-action pass with the signing of Jared Cook at tight end. I think the Rams are definitely a team to be reckoned with. Another surprise team who hasn't been beaten yet is the Miami Dolphins hosting the Atlanta Falcons. I like the Dolphins. I like what they've done. I thought they spent too much money, overpaid for a lot of players, but it's a paid off. They're started 2-0. With that being said, I still like the Falcons, Matt Ryan, and those pieces there. Still a lot of question marks in the secondary for the Falcons, but I think overall that team is destined to make some noise in the NFC. And here's a battle of two teams who haven't won anything this season. That's the Minnesota Vikings taking on my good old Cleveland Browns. as much as I want to be a homer and say the Browns are going to get it done, we're going to get our first win, I just don't see it. I really don't. Brandon Whedon has been sacked 11 times in two games. They're on pace to get about 80 to 88 sacks on the season. They're abysmal at the wide receiver position. Trent Richardson, I'm sorry, looks like a bust to me at this point. Yes, I said it. Trent Richardson looks like a bust. He looks like a middle-of-the-road running back. I just don't see it. I don't know if it's scheme. I don't know what it is. And it's just the same old Cleveland Browns. With that being said, I'm taking the Vikings. The Buffalo Bills taking on the New York Jets, battle of two rookie quarterbacks. In New York, I'm taking the Bills and this one. Tampa Bay heading to New England to take on the Patriots, who at 2-0 have not looked very sharp at all. I'm taking the Buccaneers in an upset here in Foxborough. The Saints hosting the Cardinals. Look, the Saints in that building at the Superdome are just too good. I'm taking the Saints all the way there. Titans hosting the San Diego Chargers. This is the second week in a row the Chargers are heading out east. That's a tall order for any team. I'm taking the Titans at home, despite the limitations of Jake Locker at quarterback. The Redskins taking on the Lions. This is going to be at FedEx Field in Washington. Look, the Redskins have not looked very sharp, and everyone's like, oh, RG3 this, RG3 that, RG3, RG3, RG3. Look, he's looked a little rusty, but the guy came off a torn ACL. He's not going to look like a superstar right away. That defense in Washington is what I'd be more concerned about. With that being said, Matthew Stafford, Calvin Johnson, they're going to throw the ball over the field. I'm taking the Lions into victory there. The Giants taking on the Carolina Panthers in Carolina. Two teams 0-2 that I thought would have better seasons. I'm going to take the Giants just on credibility alone and coaching overall. I think will prevail there. The Colts heading out to the Bay Area to take on the San Francisco 49ers, coming off their absolute curb stomp. The San Francisco 49ers got curb stomp in Seattle last week on Sunday night, 29-3. The 12th man was in effect, no doubt about it. The 49ers are going to be in a bad mood, and that does not bear well for the Colts at all. I'm taking the 49ers in that one. You have the Seahawks taking on the lonely Jaguars. This game could get ugly. It really could. The point spread, I think, came out at 19.5 points. I would take that all day. The Seahawks look very, very good. And I don't like to make Super Bowl predictions this early in the season. I know everybody likes to make them in the preseason before the season starts. I like to have three or four games under my belt. But I'll tell you what, from what I've seen the Seahawks so far at 2-0, man, it'd be hard not to pick them to be in the Super Bowl. The Sunday night game taking on the lonely Pittsburgh Steelers. Feels good as a Browns fan to say that. Hey, how's it feel to lose finally, Pittsburgh fans? Feels good, doesn't it? How's that Ben Roethlisberger treating you, huh? Anyway, I'm taking the Bears in that one with the Steelers starting 0-3. I love it. And the Monday night game, this is probably a game that you could probably go to bed at halftime on. I really do believe that. I think Denver Broncos are nobody wants to play that team right now. They are a buzzsaw, putting up 40, 50 points a game. Unbelievable. Peyton Manning looks as good as he ever has. He really does. The Raiders, their only hope, I think, for the Raiders to even have a chance in this game is to run the football, run the football, run the football, run the football, run some more, and be very, very successful at it. Now, with Terrell Pryor and Darren McFadden in the backfield, I think they can do that, but I just don't see the upset here. I really don't. I think the Broncos will take the Monday night affair. And this is your Week 3 NFL Pigskin Roundup. We'll move into the movies of the box office this past weekend, moving from number 10, working our way up to number 1. Number 10, Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters at $1.8 million. Elysium at $2.1 million. One Direction, $2.4 million. The movie Planes at $3.1 million. Instructions Not Included, $4.8 million. We're the Millers at $5.4 million. Lee Daniels, The Butler, which has grossed over $100 million at the box office this past weekend, making $5.4 million. And Riddick, $6.8 million. The movie The Family, which looks very, very good, $14 million. And number one at the box office, Insidious Chapter 2, which looks like a pretty creepy film. If you're into horror films, this looks like a pretty decent one, at $40 million opening weekend. Movies coming out that I definitely think you should take a look at. The movie Rush. Also, the upcoming film Prisoners, which cast alone makes it worth seeing. And, of course, Machete Kills. Yes. Yes, he does. That's what Machete does. He kills, coming out in October, Rodriguez film. And there's all kinds of great people in that movie as well. Lady Gaga, Mel Gibson, Antonio Banderas, Charlie Sheen. The list goes on there. Jessica Alba. Really, really cool cast. Looks like a very fun film. Machete Kills, coming out in October. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome to the show Dallas Fresca. Before we do that, I want to give you a little sample of what you're going to hear. This is Dallas Freschke here on Revelator. Anything left to wonder here on Revelator, and I'm very, very happy to welcome to the show at this time Dallas Freschke from Melbourne, Australia. Dallas, how are you doing?
I am fantastic, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Before we talk about the one of the singles that we just played here, Anything Left to Wonder, I gotta share with people kind of how we met. Now, our old guest of ours, Phoebe Pinnock from the band Heaven the Axe, who's great, introduced me to you indirectly, and we ended up kind of talking and kind of laying the groundwork for this interview while you were in the hospital recovering from a surgery. How everything's good with you health wise? Everything's good?
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy trip. We were we've just come back from a European tour. We were over there for 6 weeks or 7 weeks, and about a week and a half into the tour, I got appendicitis. So, I ended up going into surgery and having to cancel a couple of shows, which I've never done in my life. We've got the motto within the band that you have to be dead if you want to cancel a show or not. And, you know, there's no sick leave or anything like that when you're in a band. Yeah. So you got to keep rocking on. But unfortunately I couldn't, which was pretty gutting. But, you know, I'm healthier than I've ever been now. And Phoebe Pinnick, I cannot explain that woman. She's just incredible. And I think there's, it can be quite a competitive industry. And she's just not that. She's such an incredible supporter and, you know, non-ego based. She's phenomenal. And, I cherish her friendship. She's a really amazing performer, songwriter, creative friend. And, yeah, I really dig her. I really dig Phoebe.
Yeah, no, Phoebe was great. We had her on the show. It's been a little while now, but and it's almost kind of, you know, just we remain in contact even, you know, 6 to 8 months even after an interview. She's really good people, and it's always good to come across people like that, especially in the music industry that are genuine. You know, it's few and far between, unfortunately, but Phoebe is definitely that. And I think you're in the same elk as far as I'm concerned. I had to ask, though, when you left the hospital, what was the first meal you had that wasn't hospital food?
I actually, we were in France, so I had some bread, some pon. So, yeah, I couldn't eat too much for about a week and a half. And 6 days after the surgery, I was not cancelling any more shows, and I was still really, really sick. I wasn't healing very well. And I ended up sort of being in a tour bus, you know, full of painkillers and sitting in the back, and, you know, kind of got to the show and got pushed up on stage and walked off. And then 2 days later I ended up getting quite a bad infection, because the French don't give you antibiotics, which is quite incredible. But they have homeopathics in all the pharmacies, which I think is quite amazing. But under these circumstances, I did need them. And anyway, I ended up getting quite sick and ended up back in the hospital in the surgery, rushed by ambulance because of this infection, and was just like, I cannot believe this is happening. But in the end, they gave me antibiotics, and I came out the other side very well.
Wonderful. I'm glad you're feeling good and healthy, and
back. I'm good,
and you guys are going to be back at it real soon, hitting a bunch of shows, which we'll get into a little bit. But I want to talk about one of the singles off Soundpater, which you guys released in 2012. Anything Left to Wonder. This is the first song I ever heard from you guys, and immediately I was like, I dug it immediately. I mean, the guitar riffs, your vocals, your vocal range is pretty remarkable, and the video too was great. How fun was that to film that song in that video? You guys just basically just kind of rocking out with like a room full of people, which is great.
Yeah, it got pretty loose. We had a we've got a really good friend who works as a beer rep for Coopers in Australia, and she ended up she's been a really big supporter of the band. She ended up bringing 12 slabs of beer down to this session, you know, and the idea is we wanted chaos, and, you know, it just gets more chaotic and chaotic during the show, you know. It's sort of, we work our sets so it sort of peaks out, it's, you know, towards the end, and we're making this film clip, and we wanted to capture that within the audience, but it, you know, it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so how do you do that? So we
poured beer on it.
We poured a lot of beer on it. We played a few beer games, and by, you know, 1 o'clock that kicked off, like, it was really loose. And, you know, the people that were in there, it was just, I can't go into some of the situations that did occur on that day, but there's some really good stories that came out of that day. Few sick people, but my even my Les Paul, the headstock of this, you know, one of my favorite guitars, the headstock got snapped off, and
oh wow,
people put in their they put in that day. But it was really cool, you know. The whole album was, you know, I broke up from a long-term relationship, and, you know, with great pain creates great art a lot of time, and
yes,
and it was a really good therapy getting it all out, and you know, and just, you know, exactly how I felt, because I wasn't going to hide it anymore. So, you know, the song is based around drugs, and I suppose, and being in a relationship where that kind of occurs, and not being into it as much, and people change when they're on drugs. So, you know, it was just a therapy, that song. Is there anything left to wonder, you know? Is there sometimes? Right. So, yeah, it was a really cool track. And even after, before we were writing the album, while we were writing the album, I I gave up cigarettes, and all of a sudden I discovered this new range within my voice. And it was by accident. So this really high, and there's sort of a gap within my vocals. I've got this sort of range that I can probably sing lower than boys. You can hear by my voice, I've got a fairly deep voice. But then there's this sort of gap, and then I've got this really high range after this gap. And I've been working and working on it, and it's been a really cool discovery, you know, because you can be quite limited within your range with what you're given as a vocalist. And it's really cool, man. It's really cool to discover that and take it to a new place, which is what we're doing on the new album as well.
Very cool. Now, is there certain like techniques or training that you do with your voice to kind of discover those ranges that, you know, when you're like, you know, you're singing and maybe you catch it at a live show, like, oh, I didn't know I had that octave or that tone, and then you take that and work on it later kind of thing? Or
yeah, I mean, look, you never know what your voice is going to do. I mean, I've definitely changed my lifestyle over the last few years. If I don't get a certain amount of sleep, like there's nothing that, you know, you can't stay up all night as a vocalist and sing the way I do. It's just the way my voice is built. But, you know, you have your really good gigs, and then you have your other gigs that you're like, man, I needed a little bit more sleep the night before, or, you know, and it's like, it's even after a big show when you're doing big tours and stuff, you know, you're sitting, you kind of have to listen to people rather than talking, because it's as like any athletic kind of workout, you need to warm down. And by, I suppose, if someone was to run a, you know, 100-meter race and then keep running for the next, you know, 200 meters after that, which is like, sure, talking to fans or all of that sort of stuff, or yelling over the top of music, it just doesn't work, man. So yeah, I definitely pay attention to my vocals, but I've had one singing lesson in my life, and wow, and that really kind of got me into gear to sort of, you know, where I'm singing from, you know, like in my diaphragm and things like that. But yeah, I think the reason why I did that, I mean, I got throat nodules about maybe, I don't know, it'd be close to 10 years ago now. And I couldn't sing for 18 months, and it was, that having that creative outlet just completely shut off. So I went and worked in hospitality and ended up picking up a guitar and going, rightio, this is my new outlet. And in that time, I delved into a heap of soul music, you know, Gladys Knight, The Pips, and Aretha Franklin, and Etta James, and, you know, all the phenomenal, the masters of the craft, you know. And in that time, you know, I couldn't imitate, so I just had to listen, and, you know, discovered that a lot of these singers imitated, you know, horn instruments and things like that, because who were they to learn from in those days before them, you know? So
true.
It was a really, really great time for me, and sometimes, you know, when you stop to listen and, you know, without talking or anything, you can get way more out of a situation than you think.
No, I completely agree with you 100% there, and I'm glad you mentioned some of those artists like Aretha Franklin and Edie. Now, are those, you know, female vocalists that you kind of looked up to, you know, as you got into music?
Yeah,
you know, and really got into singing, those people that kind of, you know, obviously influenced you. Is there any obviously we mentioned Phoebe earlier in the interview, but is there any female artist or even any vocalist currently in modern day music that you kind of you hear and you go, man, I really dig what they're doing, or even other bands that you really dig what they're doing?
There's so many phenomenal singers around, you know. Like, I mean, one of my biggest influences is a woman called Betty Davis from the 60s, and she was she made these three records, and, you know, her music was so controversial at the time. You know, she sung about whipping men with her turquoise chain, and, you know, it was just rocking. She had Sly and the Family Stone as her band, and she was like this supermodel. She was amazing. Amazing, and she used to grunt and growl, and no female was doing anything like that at the time. And I always refer back to her, you know, because it's, for me, it's about not being afraid to be who you are and let that out. You know, I come from a family of motorbike riders. My dad builds motorbikes for a living, and he, you know, Zed Kawasaki's actually, and He used to train us girls when we were kids, and people, I mean, I thought it was quite normal, you know. I was from a small country town, but Dad used to train us girls up before we go to motorbike rallies and get us up on the trailer to do burnouts, you know, like to blow the tire up. And we'd go to these, you know, these three, myself and my two younger sisters, and go to these rallies and dress up in these whacked out outfits with a heap of, you know, bikey gang guys and, you know, just totally win every single time. So, you know, it's that's a part of me, and that, I suppose, that fun aggression and, you know, all those kind of things that comes in. But now, you know, like there's so many cool singers. I've been listening to there's a duo from the States, I think, called Deep Valley. There's a really phenomenal singer out of that band. It's a two-piece female outfit. But, yeah, look, I mean, I always still refer back to the old soul stuff. I mean, phenomenal singers of the last 10 years is like Amy Winehouse and Adele and things like that, you know. And we've got this kind of total rock and roll edge, but it's, you know, I mean, you can't, you know, let the music or anything else like dictate what your natural voice is, I suppose. So I definitely gotcha. Always refer back to soul music, yeah.
Well, I mean, your music is raw, and you can definitely hear the passion and energy that you put into it. And that's, you know, when the first song we played tonight, that was instantly drew me to you guys and what you're doing. Now, I had asked, you know, the next song we're in here is All of My Love,
yeah.
Which I believe was what you said was the first single off Sound Painter, which is a great CD.
Thank you.
The video, I got to talk about the video again because you guys have some cool videos. Who is dressed up in the heart in the video?
I've got to tell you the story. So, you know, when we finished the album, we came back to Australia and we had these, you know, the album really is about hard luck and overcoming, you know. There was a lot of that going on around the time. And then when we came back, this hard luck kept kind of happening, you know. We got back to and we put on a run of shows to pay for the mixing of the album. We recorded in New York with an amazing producer, Andy Baldwin, and got back, needed the cash to get it mixed because we're an independent artist. And we got back to the Melbourne airport and I walked over to the carousel. I was probably gone 10 seconds and the entire takings from the weekend, and it was a really large sum of money, was stolen. So I was just gutted. I mean, I was responsible because I was there with the cash, and it was gutting because every band knows it takes, you know, 3 months of promo, and they were really big shows, and it was a lot of cash. So I was gutted, and I'm like, all right, I need time out to kind of work out what I'm going to do. And I ended up going back to my folks, which is about 2.5 hours north of Melbourne, just for a weekend, just to chill, make the mind fresh. What the hell are we going to do? And I kept getting these texts from my guitarist, Jeff, who's incredible. He's an amazing guy. And he kept texting me, you've got to come back to Melbourne. Come back, come back, come back. And I'm like, yeah, I'm cool here. I just eat another night, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, he persisted with me and he's like, all right. So I drove 2.5 hours back because he had something to show me. So I roll into Melbourne in Carlton, and which is sort of central to the city, and I open the front door and he comes out in a gigantic paper mache love art. He's never done arts and crafts in his life, but he made this gigantic love heart. One night he got this, you know, that night he got this idea, and to cheer me up and to surround the band with love. And, you know, it was just like this perfect sentiment for, you know, the song and the album and, you know, who we all are as people in the band anyway. So I just thought it was, I forgot everything, you know, and we're like, what am I talking about? We can sort this shit out. So anyway, we ended up getting our iPhones and cruising around the city streets of Melbourne, and it was just incredible. Like, I mean, we filmed all this stuff all over the city and we're like, we need to piece this together. This is the film clip for the song. So right. I ended up editing the first video that I've ever done and directing it as it was. And, you know, it was just from the heart and you know, it wasn't planned or anything like that. And it came together really, really well. And the cost for the whole clip was $2.47 for the for the application on the phone that took us to record it, and the flower included in the paper mache. So it was cool, man. Yeah, it's had about 40,000 hits now, which is really cool.
That's it's a great video, and I had an idea that it might have been your guitar player in the paper mesh.
It was
hard, you know, aka balls upside down. But because I looking from his other videos and some of your live recordings on YouTube and stuff, he's always jumping around on stage and just you know, just going all out, which is really cool.
He's nuts. He's got so much energy, you know, and we've got such a great team within the band. And, you know, if there's always moments like it's tough being in a band. I would never complain because I love it, you know, but there's always those moments with, I suppose, with whatever, anything you do. But when thinner the team environment, there's always someone to pick someone else up. Someone's got some kind of positive spin to put on it that, you know, it's just a really incredible balance.
Very, very cool. Now, the song we're going to play here, All of My Love, again, you know, we're talking about the video, but the song itself is a great song. And I believe this is still a free download off your website. Is that correct?
Yes, you can go and get it at dallasfrasca.com. Yeah, we've got it up for free download because music should be shared, man.
Right on. And we'll have a link to your website on our site as well here at omnis.tv, so that way people can, you know, find you easy as well and you know, go download this song. I'll tell you what, is there anything we didn't know about the song itself before we spin it tonight?
Look, I mean, that was my myself. The song itself was me freeing myself from this relationship, you know, and I think everyone can relate to it. And it's about overcoming and just being free after, and, you know, it can relate to any situation really, but, you know, people really related to it. And the song itself ended up coming third in the international songwriting competition last year, which was like, you know, 16,000 entries or something. And Ozzy Osbourne was, you know, one of the judges, and Tom Waits and things like that. And regardless of, you know, what competitions or anything are, because they're all bullshit really, but, you know, being recognised by those artists that we've been inspired by and, you know, listen to their music and learnt their riffs and listen, you know, read all the lyrics is just a really, really cool honour for us.
Awesome. Well, tell you what, let's take a break here and we'll jam out. This is Dallas Fresca, All of My Love, here on Revelator.
Figure out the riddle, yeah, don't be fooled. There is more behind to what you see. Figure out the riddle, cause when he lied, my world was blown. I nearly died, yeah.
Come on! Come on! And I feel so good to be free, God! Oh, my love is gone.
gone. All my love is gone. And it's time for me to be free again.
All of my love here on Revelator, hanging out with Dallas Fresca. Now, Dallas, and you guys have been playing a bunch of shows. You know, you alluded to earlier in the first segment about, you know, hitting on the road, being on the road 6-7 weeks at a time. You know, a little hospital visit there in the midst of it. But you guys have been playing a lot of shows and really, you know, and also playing in support of some national acts as well, like Aerosmith and Billy Joel. Excuse me. You know, what is it like playing with bands like that who are, you know, obviously very established and have a really big following and have really kind of honed their craft musically? Do you get a chance to meet those bands when you're opening up with them? Do they give you any advice or encouragement when you're doing support with them?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you ask anybody for something, generally, you know, people are generous, man. You know, people are really generous. We were fortunate enough to support Patti Smith a few weeks ago on Corsica Island in the south of France. And,
nice.
You know, I just, for us, it's so surreal, I suppose. You know, Australia is quite isolated. So we weren't born and bred with a lot of these super acts that, you know, are in the world, you know. So when you do get these opportunities, it is like such a surreal moment. And then to learn that, you know, they're just human beings at the end of the day. Like last year we were honoured to open the wildlife sanctuary, the new wildlife sanctuary by Bob Irwin, which is Steve Irwin's dad, with Slash from Guns N' Roses. So we got to spend the entire day with Slash, and, you know, he's almost like this cartoon character to us in our minds, you know, and we got to hang out with him and talk to him about the songwriting process. And we've got very similar, you know, songwriting processes and also recording techniques. And it was just amazing, you know, because we're all, at the end of the day, working quite hard, you know, with that persistence to continue to try and write those good songs. And it was just amazing. And one very surreal moment was I flinged Slash a copy of the album, and as we're walking off in the distance, there's Slash with his whole band with Sound Painter on 10 cruising down the road, and we were just like, nice. Oh, my God, totally did that happen. And then about an hour, Slash tweeted us, like, you know, the most amazing quote the band's ever got. So we were just like, you know, it was really, really amazing. And when you got people like that behind your music, it, you know, people, I suppose, prick their ears up. Like, it's a really cool quote. But it's always amazing, and it's always an honour, and to share, you know, your music amongst their fans is really, really cool too, because it's always, I suppose, about audience building with your band and spreading it out, you know. I mean, it's cool. We've just been in France and we got to play at the Le Mans 24-hour car race. So we actually supported Earth, Wind & Fire, which was quite a bizarre mix with us and right. Earth, Wind & Fire. But, you know, before the show we our sound check. So it's the biggest stage. I mean, one of the biggest festivals in Australia is the Big Day Out. And the stage that we performed on was maybe four times the size of that. We were like, wow, this is cool, you know. And when we were doing our sound check, it was just like this big empty sea desert kind of thing. And, you know, along the fence line, we maybe played our sound check to about 2,000 people. And we're like, well, you know, we hope that people are going to come and see us before, you know, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire play later on. So there's a support act on before us, and there was maybe about 400 people, so it's kind of looking still like a desert. And we're like, that's cool, man. We got to support Earth, Wind & Fire. It wouldn't matter. So anyway, we were back and, you know, getting the revving each other up before the show and everything, and we walked out, and there was actually a sea of 50,000 people plus when we went to walk out on the stage, and we just couldn't believe it. It was just amazing. It was just such an amazing rush. And, you know, as a band, I suppose that's the dream, to perform in front of big audiences like that. And, you know, we really feel like we're fulfilling it. We've been together for 10 years now. So, you know, it's a really cool rush. And I suppose most people in their whole life won't experience like anything like that. It's like jumping out of a plane or something incredible like that kind of adrenaline rush. So it's been a pretty cool year, man.
Well, what's it? I mean, obviously, you know, you've obviously played shows, you know, obviously 50,000 people, and maybe played shows with, you know, just a couple hundred people. What is, you know, big venues, small venues? What do you prefer? I mean, do you like kind of the small intimate venues? You know, maybe there's, you know, 1,500 or 2,000 people as opposed to maybe playing the festival shows. Obviously, you're reaching more people with those festival shows, but do you enjoy personally the more intimate setting?
It's always
of like maybe like
different.
A small theater or something?
Yeah, it's always different. I mean, I love the rock and roll, you know, steamers, you know, where people are sweating and you know, it's hot in the room and all those kind of things. I dig that. I love it. But then, you know, there's festivals, you are introducing yourself to maybe a lot of people that may not have seen you before, plus fans, and every audience is different. You've got to read them where they're at and that kind of stuff, because it's a big energy exchange, you know. But I mean, I have no preference over each one, really. I love the rock and roll pressure cookers, and you know, when you can feel each other, you know, really, really close. And then, you know, I suppose it's quite a different performance when you're, it's louder and bigger, and but you just got to read the audience. I have no preference. I dig it all, you know. If people are willing to listen to our music and, you know, yell and scream afterwards, then we're really, we're, you know, it's really cool.
That is very cool. Now, you also have a bunch of shows coming up here, September, October, I believe, into November as well. You'll be playing, I think you're actually starting off with a couple festival shows in Australia, and then you guys will be making your way back to France. What is, you know, if people were interested, you know, in those areas and they happen to be catching this interview, how can they, you know, get tickets for those shows? And
yeah.
How excited are you guys to get back on the road again?
Look, we're pumped. I mean, that's where our strength lies. We're predominantly, you know, that's where it is. We love playing live. There's nothing better. When I'm not playing live, I just, you know, start kind of rocking in the corner a little bit. You know, it's just music chooses you sometimes to do those things, and you have to fulfill them. So we go back on the road. We've got a few festivals in Australia. We've got three or four festivals or five festivals in Australia. It's starting to warm up over here, and then we do another 3-week run over in France and come back for the festival season in Australia. But at the moment we're working on new tunes for the new album. So we've been writing. We spent quite a bit of time songwriting in an apartment in Pigalle in Paris. And then we had a really good mate who owns a venue who's got these, you know, this really cool community hub, the White Lion in Streatham. If you ever go to the UK, you've got to go to this venue. The whole pub's for a charity. It goes to teaching kids in Nepal music, and it's just a really unique environment in this venue. But they've got a few rooms off the sides that the band set up all their gear in between the last tour in the UK and began the, you know, and continued the songwriting. So we're just really focused on that at the moment, other than, you know, these festivals and the run in France. But, you know, that's where our heads are at. We've got to back this album out and back the Sound Painter album up, and it's just going to take time.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned new material. Now, do you have a set of time frame for yourself, or is this kind of one of those things where, you know, we're going to go play shows and we're going to take our time and make sure that we craft something that we really want to put out, you know, say 2014. Is there a timetable for you on that? Or
yeah, I mean, we don't work well with restrictions or limitations. We're a rock and roll band, but you know, we are really we're in a really creative phase, which is cool. And you know, it's sometimes you got to work at how you tap into that creativity. And I've just been really tuned in with what's working with me at the moment. And I watched this really cool show on the creative brain the other day, which is quite bizarre. And, you know, what works for me is if I'm pottering around the house or whatever and doing meaningless chores and things I'm not really thinking about, but I'm active, you know, I kind of get those things out of the way. And apparently this opens the frontal lobe in your brain and the third eye. And when we wrote the last album, I was doing the exact same thing and was very, very creative. So, you know, this is really, really working at the moment. And, you know, I don't think you can shortchange your songs by putting, you know, well, the album's going to be out in December or anything like that, because what if the songs aren't finished, man? We're just going to put shit out. So
right.
We're just going to continue to work really, really hard until those songs are, you know, as strong as they can be. And that's when I suppose the album. But we've got a rough thing that it's possible it might be released, you know, sort of in around 12 months. But there will be definitely a single out before then. So who knows? We could finish it next week.
Right. Well, definitely keep us in the loop here, Revelator. We definitely want to keep abreast of what you guys are up to, and we support you as best we can. Now, I got to ask, you know, obviously you're playing a bunch of shows, and as a female guest, and I don't feel comfortable asking all female guests this question, but I feel pretty comfortable with you.
You can ask me.
You know, obviously, you know, guys at shows are drinking, and they, you know, see you're a very attractive woman on stage, or you're hanging out at the merch table. What's the worst or the most offensive or even maybe the most clever pickup line you've heard?
Look, there's been a lot. I mean, I put the boys in the front line when it comes to things like that. We actually had a little situation where it's actually with our drummer Zane on the last tour, where I put it out that he's looking for a wife on Corsica Island, because, you know, then we could all move to France and, you know, everything would be perfect. But Zane's got a beautiful partner at home. And I kind of put my foot in it, you know. It was a spur of the moment thing. Anyway, people started tagging my husband, and this kind of little trend started happening within Instagram and on Twitter. And anyway, we had to kind of explain to Zane's partner that it was an innocent thing and it was my fault, and you know. Because, you know, you've got to. I mean, we've got some really supportive partners in, you know, what we do, and they're hard to come by in the music industry, because you're away a lot and you are in front of, you know, people that are wanting to meet you or, you know, whatever else with you. And, you know, you've got to have a lot of trust. And I made that trust a little bit sketchy with when I was on stage, but you know, people are loose. I mean, people are loose when it comes to after gigs and things like that. So, but yeah, it's not too bad. It's not too bad.
Very cool. That, hopefully she was a good sport about it. It's a funny joke, though.
She was cool. I know. I just couldn't believe it. Yeah, the joke's definitely ongoing, saying my husband. Anyway.
You should get a T-shirt for that, you know, maybe on the next.
For his partner. Yeah, that'd go down really well. Oh, shit.
Well, Dallas, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and I'm glad we finally had some time to do this interview before you guys hit the road again. Now, we close out tonight with the song Better Without You.
Yeah.
Now, before we do that, you know, obviously you're on Twitter and Facebook and all those things. If people are interested in what you guys are doing, I believe they're going to be. I really dig what you guys are doing. Dig the music. How can they find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, I mean, get on the Facebook, Twitter, follow us on Instagram, Dallas Frasca. Yeah, come and say hello to us. We're pretty active with the people that are supporting us, and you know, because without people, then we really don't have a band. You know what I'm saying? We got no one to play to. So we are we really appreciate everybody's support. So come and say hi. But yeah, if they want to, better without you, the track. I'd love to say that, you know, it's one of my healing songs on the album again, and it's, you know, this kind of like peek out towards the end. It's almost kind of orgasmic, like this vocal sort of thing that we do. And you know, with our live shows, it's built and built into this kind of really epic I don't know, stadium size peek out, you know. And we've just it's the opening song we have been playing for all of our live sets. But yeah, it's kind of like that healing moment when you let it all free, just from almost like a tribal vocal kind of expression. So yeah, it's funny because this track I was one of my least favorite on the album. And what ended up happening was we had a listening party for just solid fans and a few industry people before we released it. And that was people's like the second track. It was like everyone really dug this track. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you get so invested in, you know, and lost within the song, because there's so much personal attachment that you do have to ask other people. So, yeah, I really dig playing this one live.
Right. Well, I'm glad you could share it with us here on Revelator. And then let's jump right into it. This is Better Without You, Dallas. It's been a pleasure. And we'll definitely keep in touch.
Thanks for having me. Awesome.
Thank you. This is Better Without You, Dallas Frasca, here on Revelator.
You.
Alice Freshka here on Revelator. That is Better Without You. And of course, here, all of us here at Omnis.tv are better with you. For more information about Dallas Freshka and all of our past guests, head on over again to Omnis.tv. That's Omnes.tv. Click on episode number 27. And also find us on Facebook as well. That's facebook.com/omnis.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. Also, you can find me on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned on Twitter. And, I tweet all the time pretty much, check me out. And also I'm tweeting about, upcoming shows and past guests and all kinds of other interesting things as well. And sometimes I tell bad jokes. It's really a good time. Hey, Mike, wonderful job as always on the board. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 27, Sound Painter to a Paper Heart. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.